Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
I'm Contessa Brewer, in for Brian Sullivan tonight. Right now on Last Call, is the AI party over? Tech stocks get crushed. What happens next week when we get earnings from more mega caps? It could, pardon this, happen at any moment. Bitcoin's biggest event in years is here. Why you might want to manage your expectations for a fresh rally. Total Recall, Tesla's Cybertruck suffers a new blow. The owner who first raised the alarm to the public joins us. High stakes on Capitol Hill. Congress prepares votes on aid packages worth tens of billions. But the real drama might unfold afterward. He got paid what? The latest compensation for Warner's CEO David Zaslav is revealed, and investors just might find a bone to pick. And speaking of bones, it's a dog's life flying high in the sky. How some pampered pooches are traveling in the lap of luxury like never before. We have all that and more over the next hour. Last Call is up right now. We begin Last Call tonight with the rough road on Wall Street, a week that saw tech stocks get clobbered, rising interest rates and geopolitical tensions rattle investors. The S&P 500 posted its worst week in more than a year. It finished in the red for a sixth day in the row. That's its longest losing streak in nearly a year and a half. And the S&P is now 5% from its all-time high. Similar story with the NASDAQ, as the tech-heavy index saw its worst weekly performance in 17 months. The not-so-magnificent seven led the tech route this week. And the biggest loser? Tesla, down 14%. Wall Street's darling, NVIDIA, lost 10% today, its worst day since March 2020, and it posted its worst week since September 2022 and is now in bear market territory. And Apple's rotten run continues. It hit its lowest level in nearly a year. But look, it wasn't all red. Investors were buying today into utilities, financials, and energy. And next week, we get a monster slate of tech earnings. Tesla, Meta, Alphabet, Microsoft will reveal quarterly results. I mean, who's a gambler here? You want to hold, fold, walk away, or run? Our market panel, Clio Capital Managing Director Sarah Kunst and StoneX Chief Market Strategist Catherine Rooney-Vera joining us now for Last Call. And it's good to see you both. You know, the option here, Sarah, that I didn't mention is, do you want to buy in at this point when you see such a sell-off from some of these darlings?
I think that this is a scary time to buy in. You know, tech is having an interesting time based on a lot of different sort of underlying issues. But separate from that, there is a macro situation which is keeping all of us up at night for reasons that have nothing to do with the market. And so the reality is, when you have this much global uncertainty, thinking that you're going to be able to time the bottom, I think, is a fool's errand.
When we're looking at the potential flights to safety, I said today that you saw investors buying in and utilities turning green, energy turning green. And energy, given what we're seeing develop in the Middle East, might have raised a few eyebrows. What do you think, Catherine?
Well, I think the traditional defensive sectors are coming back into vogue as being precisely that, defensive. Remember, Contessa, there was a time when tech was considered the safety trade or the defensive trade or Teflon tech. And I think that right now what we're seeing is the rise in treasury yields, with the 10-year treasury note now trading about 45 basis points, you know, more than the S&P earnings yield, puts into question the valuations of the most overextended sector, which is effectively tech. So what happens? People start to realize profits, because NVIDIA is down, but over the past, what, year or 2 years, it's still at 50%. So they're taking profits and they're rotating into what is historically defensive sectors, which are bond proxies. I haven't done so well, but staples and healthcare, Utilities tend to be that. Gold is catching a huge bid, as is, I suspect, will continue to those 5% two-year treasury notes that are pretty juicy yielders at this point.
Given the price hikes that we've seen in gold recently, do you think it's too late to choose that as a safe haven?
Yeah, it's way overbought. I think it's smart to take profits on gold right now and look for a better entry point. I'm specifically looking at gold miners. There's a big differential, big wide spread between miners and gold stocks. You have central banks inordinately accumulating gold, trying to diversify away from the U.S. dollar and the treasury market, and that's probably going to continue. So I would look for better entry points in gold. I wouldn't be accumulating right now, and I agree with what Sarah said. You know, jumping into tech at this juncture, jumping into gold, which are overbought and overvalued, I think is a little dangerous.
You know, when we're talking about NVIDIA's plummet on the week and certainly today, it wasn't just that. You have Supermicro Computer down 17% this week, Micron Tech down 12%. Sarah, what's behind sort of these more specific drops?
I think when you look at AI and the chip sector specifically, the reality is that there is a bright future out there and it is not here yet. And so what we're seeing quarter over quarter is that people aren't actually finding applications for these chips yet. And so there is a sort of lag there where, you know, the price is the price based on the potential in 5-10 years. And the reality is that you wake up today, you wake up tomorrow, and you see that people aren't actually using these chips as much as people thought they would be.
Okay, well, when we look at AI, we're likely to get a big picture from some of the big reporters next week. Let's just take, for instance, Alphabet. Catherine, what do you expect to hear when Alphabet comes out next week with its quarterly earnings?
We have some big, very profitable tech companies, and that's led the rally. But I completely agree with Sarah again. I think that, you know, AI has to play catch up now with valuations. Last year, we saw earnings deficit, earnings recession, but a multiple expansion led 25% rally in the S&P 500. That was banking on double-digit earnings growth for 2024. We've never seen earnings recessions back, or a historical anomaly would be to have 2 years of consecutive earnings recessions outside of an actual economic recession. So I think that AI has to deliver at this point. And I think I agree. It's more of a 10-year out there story. Right now, it's the zeitgeist. Everybody loves talking about it. It's the buzzword. Corporations like to see their stock prices increase just by throwing that term around. But it's not fully deployed. And I suspect that the productivity gains that we've seen over the past year, which have been phenomenal, are going to be somewhat ephemeral. And I think that has to do with the lack of full-scale adoption of AI to really increase productivity and maintain productivity gains at the 4% annualized rate we're seeing.
All right, Sarah, if people are sitting at home this weekend and taking your advice, where are you looking for opportunities?
You know, I am looking for opportunities in to some extent in just holding. I think that waiting is not bad.
Wait, patience is actually a virtue?
You know what? I don't have many virtues. That this weekend is one of them. So, yeah, I think that you wait. I think that you see how things unfold and don't sort of, you know, have diamond hands, right? Hold for a bit. You don't have to run in to the markets, because the reality is that scared money rarely makes money. This isn't the best time to sell. And honestly, I'm not sure it's the best time to buy. I think the move is to wait.
Sarah Kunst, Catherine Rooney Vera, thank you, ladies. Have a great weekend. Let's take a look now at your studs and duds for the week. The biggest winner of the week, United Airlines, jumping 23%. It said it expects stronger quarters ahead. The biggest loser, well, we talked about it there, Supermicro Computer, down 21%. Up next, having their cake and eating it too. A huge moment for Bitcoin. Comes at any moment, but will it actually light a rocket under the prices? And then you're seeing, we've got the videos mixed up. Now we're seeing the Bitcoin video. We were seeing the Cybertruck. A recall affecting every single Cybertruck. The owner who first sounded the alarm to the public joins us with reaction. And look at that fast reaction from the control room. Quick break. We'll be right back.
Support for this program is provided by Chevron. Methane management is a critical part of achieving a lower carbon future. Chevron is taking action to keep methane in the pipe. Their 2028 upstream methane intensity target is set to be 53% below the 2016 baseline. They're committed to evolving facility designs and operating practices. And they've trialed over 13 advanced detection technologies, including drones and satellites. That's energy in progress. Learn more at chevron.com/methane.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Tomorrow's News Tonight, and we have a very special story this evening. It's one of the biggest events of the year, if you're a crypto fiend. It's the Bitcoin halving. It could happen at any moment. We're literally watching this moment by moment. Historically, when it happens, it gives Bitcoin quite a boost. CNBC's Kate Rooney is here watching this. I have two questions. One is that, will there be confetti when it happens? And two, when will it happen?
It could happen in the next hour, but can you imagine the Bitcoin halving on the same day as a Taylor Swift album? What a day. Anyway, it's been this long-awaited event, at least as you said, if you're watching Bitcoin. It happens every 4 years, and Bitcoin hasn't been around that long. It was created in 2009. This is the fourth halving in its brief history. It's this pre-programmed part of Bitcoin's code, so the name can be a little bit misleading. It doesn't cut entire Bitcoin supply in half. It actually cuts the future supply in half. So you can think of it as a way to slow down production and by changing what are known as the block awards. New Bitcoin is created by miners. You might have heard that term. These are the companies running high-powered computers to validate transactions. They're basically solving complex math problems. And then they get new Bitcoin as a reward. So right now, that's 6 Bitcoin. It's going to get cut in half, hence the name, to 3 Bitcoin. This phenomenon does have implications for some of those mining companies, many of which are publicly traded. Riot, Marathon Digital, for example, have gotten hit ahead of this. You've seen a lot of volatility in those names. And Bitcoin scarcity, it's a big part of its appeal. You might have heard people argue that this is a deflationary asset and a store of value amid inflation around the world. This is because of that cap on its supply. The total amount of Bitcoin that can ever be mined is 21 million. And as far as the price impact, investors I'm talking to say, don't get your hopes up. The event, it's been widely expected. There are many, including Fundstrat, JP Morgan among them, that have warned about a ton of volatility and that this may be what's described as a buy the rumor, sell the news event. So that's the near-term expectation. But over the long term, it has sparked the beginning of other longer bull runs in Bitcoin. The market also looks quite different, though, than it did around the last halving. So the launch of the new ETFs in Bitcoin earlier this year ushered in way more institutional interest in investors, which really has changed the market dynamic in Bitcoin. As analysts over at Glassnode put it, ETF demand is now having a lot more of an influence than we'll see on this market from the halving, Contessa.
You know, so it's interesting because it's been trading. If you look especially at the chart from like February to March, it was trading a lot more like a tech stock on a tear than, say, gold.
Yeah, it's a great point. And I think that's one of the big arguments still in Bitcoin. You have this cohort who looks at it and sees the store of value. And in large part, because of what we're talking about, because of this cap on supply, it is deflationary. So there's a lot of the fundamentals around Bitcoin. People look at it and say, that's absolutely a store of value, but it has been trading like a high risk growth asset. And until the majority of investors in Bitcoin decide, all right, this is a store of value, it's not going to trade that way. And with more institutions in, they view it as a tech stock. So they're allocating, you know, 2% or less to this, and they're putting it in the growth category, not necessarily, you know, in the gold category. But long-term investors see this as, you know, a store of value, but it's still yet to be proven, Contessa. So I think that's one of the things that makes this asset class so divisive.
Kate, thank you for joining us this Friday night. Let's stick with the story. Bring in Kavita Gupta. She's the founder and general partner of the Delta Blockchain Fund. You heard Kate describing there this bull run that has followed other halvings. I was looking it up. Last halving was May of 2020, when the price of Bitcoin stood at $8,602. In 1 year, it then climbed to $56,705, a pretty huge jump. Why is it that you're not expecting the same kind of momentum following this halving?
Hi, Contessa. I think we are, if you're talking about an year from now, then we do expect Bitcoin prices to be much higher than where it is today. But I think the difference in opinion this time is it's a very unique cycle. The ETF approval earlier this year has already priced in a huge amount of demand. And I think the Bitcoin halving, because it has already happened twice and three times already, and it has given such a high expectations results and with respect to prices, it's been priced in. What we are seeing is a very unique cycle between a supply and a demand, where Bitcoin miners are slowly and slowly reducing, have to reduce the supply, but at the same time, the demand is super high. Plus, you add the geopolitical conditions which we are facing right now and the upcoming U.S. election. It's a very, very unique and one of the first cycle which we're going to see BTC writing its own price movement.
What's your anticipation of how this will affect or the broader cryptocurrency, digital currency market in general?
Yeah, the technology tokens, as we like to call, I think Ethereum is doing very well with Ether trailing behind. It hasn't touched its all-time high, which in the new cycle, which Bitcoin did, but it is being very strong. Even when it drops, it is dropping between 5 to 7% instead of other technology tokens, whether we are talking about Polygon, Solana, say Aptos, which has been moving between 15 to 20%, most of the alt tokens. What we are expecting is once slowly all this price, which has been built in, going to take in summer a 15, 20% reduction, we are going to see a big spike up, whether that is going to be a US election and expectations from the businesses, whether a little bit better conditions geopolitically, but also at the same time, we are seeing a lot of new narrative technology and some of the biggest tokens like Wormholes and Athena getting launched in the space, taking the technology tokens also pumping up in a much bigger way along with Bitcoin. So I'm expecting post summer later this year to see a very big, great bull cycle, and by the end of the year, all time highs.
You know, the interesting thing is we talk a lot and we've heard a lot of experts talking about Bitcoin as a safety play, as a hedge against political concerns. But if you look at a chart last night when Israel launched those strikes into Iran, you had Bitcoin really falling then. And then last weekend when Iran launched its attack against Israel, the same thing happened. It was pretty dramatic. Do you think Yes. Bitcoin is a hedge against this kind of uncertainty geopolitically?
I personally have experienced this in the countries. I actually, if you go to Latin America and Africa, I have seen now people trusting Bitcoin as a saving, as taking it along with them in case there is an emergency and they have to leave the country, than even gold. So practically on ground it is. But last week when actually there was Iran's thing on Israel, I think the most important thing was it was also a combination of tax liquidity, which suddenly there was a whole idea that should there be money into this with the tax squeeze. And I think what we saw quickly is how the jump actually has come back to the same price range. And that has been very fascinating, that very quickly it went under 60 and you saw a huge 20,000 Bitcoin order to be taken place by a big whale, around $1.6 billion order, and suddenly you see the whole market jumping off. So these big spike which we see is very interesting because of the geopolitical situation, but I don't think that has any questions regarding the safety of it.
Kavita, thank you so much for sharing your insight and your perspective with us. Coming up, it's a big difference that a TikTok video can make. A recall sweeps every Cybertruck on the road. The owner whose viral video brought public attention to the problem joins us with his reaction next.
Support for this program is provided by Chevron. Methane management is a critical part of achieving a lower carbon future. Chevron is taking action to keep methane in the pipe. Their 2028 upstream methane intensity target is set to be 53% below the 2016 baseline. They're committed to evolving facility designs and operating practices. And they've trialed over 13 advanced detection technologies, including drones and satellites. That's energy in progress. Learn more at chevron.com/methane.
Welcome back to Last Call. Tesla shares ending the week on a low note. The EV maker has issued a voluntary recall of all its long-awaited Cybertrucks. It's a real recall in the traditional sense, not an over-the-air update like the previous Tesla quote-unquote recalls. This one is to repair a trapped pedal issue. It's pretty important for that to work. Brought to the public attention in a viral TikTok video by a guy who owns a Cybertruck, Jose Martinez. He posted it last weekend. But according to a traffic safety filing, Tesla originally became aware of this issue March 31st and then decided on April 12th it would issue the recall order. With us tonight for more, Jose Martinez. Thank you for being here. So what happened? When did you know that you had a problem?
So I was actually at a local drag strip with the car. It has an advertised 0 to 60 of 2.6 seconds, 845 horsepower. And the only way to really make full use of it was legally was at a drag strip. So that's where I was when the incident happened, actually.
Okay, and what happened?
So I went to hit the brakes, and the brake does override the accelerator. But the moment I would lift off the brakes, the car would lurch forward again at full throttle. There was an error on the screen saying that both pedals were being depressed. It was really confusing. Luckily, I had a big runoff area where I could try to figure out what happened. And I was able to safely pull to the side, stop the car, put it in park. And then as I looked around, that's where I realized the pedal was stuck to the floor.
How long have you had your Cybertruck?
Just a couple of weeks. I think I picked it up on the 8th of this month.
And what's it like for you now? I mean, I know that people who wanted these have been waiting for so long to get them and to be able to drive them around. What's it like for you now to be facing a recall of a very serious issue? If you hadn't been in a place where you could, you know, have a runoff like that, it seems like this could have ended very differently.
Yeah, so I was definitely in the right kind of situation for something wrong to go, something to go wrong. And be able to safely be out of that situation. But no, had I been on a street or a highway or something, it probably would have brought more panic to me, especially being around other cars and other people. And that's kind of the reason why I made the video. It was more of an awareness thing. I didn't realize it was going to go as wild as it did.
And we see right there the video of you pointing out the brake covers and what happened where you were. Let me look at the timeline here. This is what Tesla released, that they got the first complaint on March 31st, then April 2nd, that there were engineering reviews of the brake and the accelerator pedals. April 3rd, Tesla got a second claim of an issue. The engineering had reviewed the first customer claim. They conducted more tests, and then April 12th decided to issue the voluntary recall. They say that they are unaware of any collisions, injuries, or deaths related to the issue. Are you satisfied with the timeline on this? Do you feel like the company that manufactures your vehicle is taking it seriously?
I honestly think that they did. I work in the auto industry. I work in auto sales. So I'm very familiar with recalls, and I see them happen all the time. And obviously sometimes they're for something major like this, and sometimes they're for something, you know, relatively small. But I do think that the amount of time that they reacted to this, and for being such a small amount of vehicle incidents, I do think that they kind of did the right thing in stopping. They did a stop sale over the weekend of not releasing cars to anybody while they kind of finalized the recall situation and issued a fix for it.
Well, I hope you get yours fixed fast and get back out there on the road, because I understand that it's made you quite the magnet on the roadway, and everybody wants a picture of your car. And hopefully you
too. Yeah, definitely.
Thank you, Jose. Coming up, Capitol Hill's $95 billion showdown. A pivotal weekend looms with huge stakes for the U.S., for your money, and for the fate of TikTok. After this. Welcome back. Three major issues are colliding in Washington tonight: foreign aid for U.S. allies, a potential TikTok ban, and the future of the House Speaker. With us for more is NBC News Capitol Hill correspondent Ryan Nobles. Okay, so Ryan, which one do you want to tackle first?
Well, Contessa, you're absolutely right that they all merge together, and it's all going to collide this weekend. And that's because House Republicans and Democrats joined up earlier today, and they passed a procedural measure that's going to set the stage for four separate votes on national security bills that deal with a whole range of issues, including funding for Ukraine, Taiwan, and Iran. And then, of course, that fourth bill, which deals with a national security suite of policies that includes a ban of TikTok. We'll deal with Ukraine first. Ukraine is the problem for Speaker Mike Johnson. This is going to be needed aid for the country, critical aid, as they're continuing to see setbacks in their war against Russia. But it's something that House conservatives are very much opposed to, so much so that they are threatening to call up that motion to vacate, which could put Speaker Johnson's job in danger. Now, Johnson's well aware of that. He's decided that the stakes are too high. That's why he's allowed this to come to the floor for a vote. It's very likely that all four measures will pass. Now, in terms of TikTok, you're probably asking yourself, didn't they already pass a TikTok bill? And that's true. The House did pass a bill that would force ByteDance, the Chinese company that owns TikTok, to divest their interest in TikTok within 6 months, or the app would be banned in the United States. That bill is stalled in the Senate right now. There were concerns about the timeline and a few of the other provisions in the bill. They've tweaked that legislation in this new House version. There'll now be a year for ByteDance to divest from TikTok before it is potentially banned in the United States. And key senators who are holding it up in the Senate have said that they will vote yes for that package now. So it's very likely that it will become law. And Contessa, of course, as you know, this comes despite an aggressive public relations campaign by TikTok. They've been lobbying Congress very hard over the past year to prevent this exact legislation from becoming a reality. But it looks very much so that in the next week or so, ByteDance is going to be faced with the possibility of having to divest in TikTok, or TikTok will no longer exist in the United States.
Ryan, Contessa, thank you for giving us the up-to-the-minute update there on Capitol Hill. With us tonight for more on what's at stake, former Chief of Staff to Vice President Mike Pence, Mark Short. Mark, it's good of you to join us here on Last Call. I'm curious, when it comes to aid to our allies overseas, you know, what's at stake here when you have this conservative faction fighting so hard against it?
Well, Contessa, thanks for having me on. I think that traditionally the conservatives have wanted to support our allies that are defending themselves against Russian aggression, or defend Israel against Iranian attacks, or actually defend Taiwan against Chinese aggression. And so this would, I think, traditionally been a conservative piece of legislation. But you're right. It seems that there are many in the Republican Party today that I think prefer the notion of marveling about the cleanliness of Moscow grocery stores as opposed to actually standing firm with our allies. And that has been a big shift in the Republican Party that I think has created a growing caucus that that certainly wants to express their displeasure with Speaker Johnson, despite the fact that this is traditionally what you would have seen Republicans doing on Capitol Hill.
Do you think that there's any sense among Republicans in the House that the chaos that gets called when a speaker will get ousted, or when you have to have repeated votes to get a speaker elected, like we saw with Kevin McCarthy, that the patience is just wearing thin?
I think that for a lot of responsible members that the patience has worn thin. I think that's why you actually see, in many cases, Democrats who are willing to express that they'd be willing to save Mike Johnson over this. But I think that, sadly, much of our politics today is more performance artists as opposed to those who are looking to actually accomplish things on behalf of the American people. And they know that if they file a motion to vacate, that they're going to get more cable TV hits or more social media hits. And so I think the incentives are not aligned anymore the way they used to once be.
Why would they be willing to save the Democrats, Mike Johnson, when they didn't step in and save Kevin McCarthy?
It's a good question. I do think that there was a more partisan dislike for Kevin. They viewed Kevin as somebody who had targeted their members to try to defeat them. I don't think there's that same sense with Mike Johnson. I think there's more collegiality and a personal affection for him. Even if they disagree on policy, there is more of a personal respect. And I think that they also were obviously those who supported this bill. So they don't want to see this bill be the reason for his being vacated from the speakership.
Let's talk a minute here about TikTok and this proposal to ban TikTok unless ByteDance divests. What's at stake? And when you have these members trying to grapple with the national security threat that they consider TikTok to be, do they also have to consider the calculus that this is the social media app for young people everywhere?
Yes, Contessa, but I think the reality is, let's step back and recall that this is the recommendation from the intelligence community. The Committee on Foreign Investment in the United States made this recommendation to the Trump administration 4 years ago, and they passed an executive order pushing this. Ironically, the Biden administration canceled it in their first year in office. However, President Biden has now said that he would support this if it reaches his desk. And I think that the change has been very dramatic here in the last few months, because beginning this year, there's the expectation that all the money Jeffrey Yass was putting behind Republicans and owning a quarter of ByteDance, that there was no way this legislation would actually advance. And then you saw a 50-0 vote on Energy and Commerce Committee get out of committee, and then a 350 vote in the floor of the House. And I think the momentum has continued. And as Ryan was expressing earlier, seeing Maria Cantwell now express her support for the bill, too, I think it's pretty certain that this is getting to the president's desk to sign into law.
Okay, three questions. What's your prediction on the aid to foreign allies? What's your prediction on TikTok? What's your prediction on Mike Johnson?
I think that both legislation gets to the president's desk. I think that it'll pass the House tomorrow. And I think that the Senate will take it up early to midweek, Tuesday or Wednesday. And I think Joe Biden will be signing those into law. I would anticipate that with three members now expressing the willingness to file a motion to vacate, that they will do so. But I think that Speaker Johnson prevails, because I think that there's more support for continuing and stopping the chaos. And so I think he'll remain Speaker through the rest of this Congress.
What a beautiful sunset behind you in Capitol Hill. Mark Short, thank you for your time. Appreciate that. Let's get to Quicker Than the Ticker. It's all the best of the rest of the headlines.
Let's put 60 seconds on the clock. Apple's been ordered to remove WhatsApp and Threads from its app store in China. China's top regulator claims those apps are a security risk. Both are owned by Meta. The FAA will now require more rest time for air traffic controllers. 10 hours of rest between shifts and 12 hours off before a midnight shift. The FAA has documented a number of close calls recently, including yesterday at Washington's Reagan Airport. Walmart shoppers could be eligible to receive $500 from a class action lawsuit if they purchased Wade goods between 2018 and 2024. The suit alleges Walmart falsely inflates product weight. You have until June 5th to file a claim. The Tortured Poets Department, Taylor Swift's new surprise double album, just broke a major Spotify record. In less than 12 hours, it became the most streamed album in a single day so far this year. Giant pandas are coming to the San Francisco Zoo. It's unclear when or how many pandas the city will get, but you better get ready for an onslaught of cuteness. And we're done. Coming up, another CEO scoring jaw-dropping pay. Warner Brothers Discovery CEO David Zaslav's compensation just revealed. Will it spark an investor uproar? Stay with us.
Well, times are tough for media companies and their stocks, but it doesn't seem like it's the worst time to be a media CEO. As the Wall Street Journal put it bluntly today, Warner Brothers Discovery lost money last year while its CEO got a $50 million payday. That CEO is David Zaslav. And while he's raking it in, Warner Brothers Discovery shares are down 40% over the past year and down 65% since WBD began trading April of 2022. Why the discrepancy? Zaslav's pay was tied heavily to free cash flow. And with aggressive cost-cutting measures like layoffs and canceled films, the company's treasure chest nearly doubled to more than $6 billion. Zaslav booked $49.7 million in compensation, up 27% from 2022. Joining me now, Laura Martin, the managing director, as well as the senior internet and media analyst at Needham. Laura, you know, it's really top of mind because we've been paying so much attention to Elon Musk's pay compensation package, the judge knocking it down in Delaware, the shareholders taking another stab at it. Is it just that we're paying too much attention to it, or is the falling share price really a reason to take a second look at how much Zaslav is earning?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're trying to figure out, is he doing a good job? He's laying off people, so he's not doing a good job for employees, but he's actually not making money for shareholders either, to your point about with the shares being down 30% this year and 70% since the merger. So it's unclear who he's doing good for, that he deserves $50 million payday, especially tone deaf, against the strikes that last year, in part saved him a bunch of the cash flow that he then got paid on because they shut down content creation. So, you know, it is the board's job to set comp. And I think the board is doing a particularly bad job here and sort of making Zaslav the most hated man in Hollywood. Here's another arrow in that quiver.
At this point, does free cash flow and basing compensation on that stick in your craw? Do you think that that's just a bad metric on which to base executive compensation?
Well, I think the issue is that you can shut down films and you can create free cash flow 1 year. And then how much value did you destroy over the next 2 or 3 years in order to do that? Because he gets to keep the comp, even if the free cash flow he cut the wrong people or he cut out films that would have had a positive return on capital. So I do think free cash flow can be manipulated. And he got lucky because the strikes shut down content spending. So he got a lot of free cash flow that he got paid on that had nothing to do with his competence.
Another company that you cover, Netflix, has taken a real beating after earnings. You just upgraded the stock to a buy. Is it just because of the plummet, or what is there that you see in Netflix to like?
Definitely valuation is cheaper today than it was yesterday. But no, what we see that we really like is we really like the ad-driven, the growth in ads. They say next year it will be actually a meaningful part of revenue, and advertising has 80% margins. So when you have, you're adding an advertising revenue stream, your margin expansion ends up well ahead of estimates. And secondly, they have like three forms of price increases now that they're sort of phasing around their 190 countries. So we think that the revenue line will over-deliver consensus estimates as well. And I really like the fact that what they said yesterday was that if they have excess free cash flow, like they're going to make $6 million this year or $6 billion, they're going to use it to buy in shares, not repay debt. So that's actually means they're going to be shrinking the capital structure and creating a permanent set of demand for shares in the marketplace.
Or boost compensation for their CEO. Meanwhile, if you like advertising and the margin so much, doesn't AI give them potentially an even bigger boost in terms of all these people? You have their data, you know what they like, and delivering niche advertising.
I do. I really think that globally scaled businesses have a competitive advantage in terms of data, and generative AI makes that data work harder for you, both in terms of revenue streams, but also in terms of costs. Better recommendations, elongating engagement, better personalization of what they're recommending to you. So generative AI just makes all that data really powerful compared to your competitors. And they have best-in-class data at Netflix.
Laura, I appreciate your time. I always appreciate your insight. Thank you.
Thank you, Contessa.
California has the largest homeless population in the nation, with more than 181,000 people experiencing homelessness last year. Well, now one county is turning to AI to help stem the crisis. CNBC's Kate Rogers is here. So how are they doing it, Kate?
Hi, Contessa. L.A. County's Homelessness Prevention Unit has intervened with nearly 800 individuals and families using artificial intelligence to identify people most at risk of losing housing. The program relies on a model that was developed by the California Policy Lab at UCLA. It uses data from 7 different L.A. County departments, anonymized for privacy, including emergency room visits, behavioral health care, and public benefits programs, from food stamps to income support and homeless services. At-risk individuals like Courtney Peterson are then found. After being laid off from her job in December, Peterson worried she wouldn't be able to pay rent for herself and her 7-year-old son.
I feared that I was going to have to leave my apartment. I feared that I was going to have to take my son to like a homeless shelter or family shelter.
She and her son received some $8,000 from the county to cover rent, utilities, and basic needs, allowing her to stay put in her apartment while she looks for a new job. The program is largely funded by dollars from the American Rescue Plan Act. Individuals and families receive between $4,000 and $8,000 to help cover expenses and stay housed. That's a fraction of the nearly $36,000 that a chronically homeless person costs taxpayers a year. And 86% retain permanent housing once they leave the program, according to the county. The solution is preventative and a key here for a state that has spent $24 billion in the last few years to tackle homelessness.
Compared to the cost, both financially and from a human trauma perspective, that a person or a jurisdiction incurs when you have such a massive population of people sleeping outside. $4,000 to keep somebody in their housing is more cost effective.
Ethicists do raise the concern, of course, about AI being utilized by governments, especially around issues of informed consent and privacy of anonymous data. But in LA, help is reaching at least some of the at-risk population when they really need it, Contessa.
And then what's the reaction from people who are struggling with housing when they hear that the county is ready to help?
Yeah, so sometimes it can be hard to track people down and get in contact with them. But people like Courtney say that they're just thrilled to have this outreach from the county because it's not an individual going to the county in this case seeking help. It's the county reaching out to them, offering several thousand dollars, which in some cases does sound like it's too good to be true. So Dana, who you heard from, said sometimes people are concerned it may be a scam, but they are really just here to help. And they are certainly doing that with nearly 800 people helped so far.
Any indication that they can replicate this in other counties in California, but also perhaps in other states and other cities?
Well, California is certainly a state that many other states look to for trends and learnings. But Dana Vanderford, again, from the county, did say that they've had some initial conversations and interest from Santa Clara County and San Diego County, as we know. And as you said in the story, California does have a very large and growing homelessness population. So this is just one unique solution. And the people who developed this at UCLA said they really encourage other people to take this learning, look at AI being used for good, and see how they can replicate it.
Kate Rogers, thank you for bringing us that story. Coming up, going to the dogs. Literally, luxury air travel for your favorite dog may never be the same. Stay with us. Avid travelers who happen to be dog lovers frequently face a conundrum. What do you do with your pup when you fly? I mean, little dogs get shoved under the seat, and then all the others face the crate in the cargo hold. The CEO of Bark, which runs a pet product subscription service, decided to walk a mile in his Great Dane's shoes, or something like that.
How do you feel about a four-hour flight?
I don't feel good about the next 4 minutes in this.
Yeah. This really does suck. No seat belts, no airbags, just bouncing around.
I mean, that's really commitment. Matt Meeker started a private jet service for dogs called Bark Air, and Matt joins us now. I'm glad to see you out of the crate. Can you describe what Bark Air is?
Well, you said it very well. It is a way for humans and dogs to travel together in comfort and in safety, not those conditions in the cargo hold or stuffed into a duffel bag in a seat in front of you.
All right. So you're basically talking about a private plane, yeah?
We're starting that way. Yes. Yes. That's the way we're starting.
Can't you take your dog or as many dogs? I know people who have six and they fly with them on their private plane. Can't you just hire your plane and then bring your dog?
You can if you have that kind of money. But we know that those planes are anywhere from $50,000 to $100,000 plus. So we've taken one step and made it a bit more accessible for people. Not a big enough step. We have to go further and make it accessible and affordable to a larger group. But $6,000 is more accessible than $60,000.
Okay, $6,000, is that round trip?
That's one way domestically, yes.
Okay. Will that get you from one coast to the other? Or I see 8,000 New York to London.
New York to London is 8,000, New York to LA, and it is 6,000, yes.
Okay. So right now you have what? These two routes. What's the plan?
Well, the plan is to fly those, provide great experiences, hopefully build a very positive reputation, and then add more routes. And as we add more, hopefully we can lower the prices and make it more affordable. And then that allows us to expand even faster.
I was laughing at your video because I was like, well, yeah, you're a grown man getting in a crate. And then I saw the dog that inspired this for you, your dog Hugo, which I understand passed away. And I'm sorry, but now you have Gary. There's Hugo who inspired this. And now you have Gary, who presumably flies with you. I had Olive. She was a mini dachshund. I could just shove her under the seat. She also died. And I have to say, one of the big considerations about my next dog is, how do I get a dog that's small enough to fit under the seat? Are those concerns, as long as I'm willing to shell out $6,000, a thing of the past?
They are a thing of the past. You can bring any size dog you want, especially a Great Dane, 140-pound Great Dane. It's built for that, but we welcome the little dogs as well. And I've started a few businesses in time. This is the first time where I've been flooded with people saying thank you for providing this service and how important it is to their lives.
Matt, thank you for joining us. And Brian will be back with everybody on Monday. Hope you have a great weekend. We're flying high here. American Greed is next.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.